Hello and welcome. Although that music is from Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to Jurassic Park, the classic novel by Michael Crichton. You can probably hear an airplane in the background, but this is the only time that I can sit down and record, so hopefully it won't be too much of a distraction, and it will go away pretty quickly. Although it sounds like it's getting closer, so we'll see what happens. I meant to put out a couple of episodes per week until the end of May, but it seems like work is getting the better of me, and I'm not able to record as much as I would like, so I will probably just get to the end of Jurassic Park by the end of May, and then I'll have to figure out what I'm going to do in June and July, whether I'm going to try to squeeze in both the Poppy War and the Dragon Republic, or if I'm just going to try to do the Poppy War now and do the Dragon Republic later on in the year. Keep looking at the schedule to see how things are adjusted as we go forward. In this episode, episode 13, I'm going to finish up iteration 5 with the chapter called Control. As I've been doing, I will read the brief summary from SparkNotes. Thank you again, SparkNotes, for providing the summaries. And after that, I will give my reaction to, in this case, just a single chapter. Episode 13, Fifth Iteration, Flaws in the System Will Now Become Severe. Ian Malcolm. Control. Arnold reports that the T-Rex finally succumbed to its tranquilizer dose, as Muldoon had not missed after all. Just as Arnold is gloating that things are back in order, he notices that the park has been running on its auxiliary power and that the power has suddenly run out. He actually discovers that the power runs out first, and then he discovers that it's been running on auxiliary power, but that's neither here nor there. He realizes there was a mix-up when he shut the power off earlier. Meanwhile, the waterfall stops flowing and the maintenance door opens, releasing Grant. Back at the control room, Wu reads a printout that indicates that the electric fences have been off for the last 5 hours. Arnold goes out to try to turn the generator back on, but is killed by a velociraptor. Muldoon and Gennaro narrowly escape the pack of raptors, but Gennaro is attacked by a raptor when he goes back to the generator to try to turn it on again. Once again, thank you to SparkNotes for that succinct summary, and now for my reaction. Body count. Hey, people died this chapter! Do I sound like a sociopath? They're fictional, so maybe a fictional sociopath? In any case, people died. Also, a dinosaur. During their attempts to get the power on and clean up the park, they blow up a velociraptor. Technically, only the upper half gets blown off. Crichton makes a point of describing how the legs and tail twitch in response. John Arnold and Gennaro, as mentioned, both get killed on their way to restore the main power. A velociraptor makes its way to the bunker where the auxiliary power needs to be reset for the main power to be turned back on. It quote-unquote outsmarted them both in short order and dispatches them just as quickly. Wow, I missed body count. I mean, I could be forgiven, right? A chapter named quote-unquote Tyrannosaur versus one named quote-unquote Control. Then again, I should have known that Crichton would pull the old switcheroo. What kind of nerd writes exactly what the audience expects? Who has two thumbs and all that? You missed it, but I did the this guy. I guess I just did it there, but you didn't see the thumbs. Hey, you win some and you lose some. Dinosaurs attack. I already discussed the velociraptor attacks in the body count section. No other dino attacks in this section. I hate to say it for two reasons. One, Crichton already got me with the old switcheroo. And two, I like both sections and I think they can exist independent of one another. However, maybe I need to realize that it is one or the other. Oh well, I committed to it, and I'm not one to shy away from commitment. Oh, I just remembered another attack that didn't result in a death. Vindication comes swift and merciful this time. Muldoon, stuck in a pipe, fends off a group of velociraptors that attacked. So, while the actual attack happens quote-unquote off-screen, so to speak, he informs us that it happened through his conversation with Control. But the attack happened, and it vindicates me, so I'm counting it. A note about the science. Oh boy. What the right here? Science itself doesn't feature prominently in this chapter. However, Malcolm has some feelings about the practice of science. Boy, does he. You may remember that I caped for Malcolm pretty hard in a couple of earlier episodes. I called out his sexism and borderline misogyny. So, while I condemned this behavior, I also implicitly condoned it. By giving him the title of quote-unquote liked best, I opened up that can of worms. How can we, if possible, quote, appreciate the art or artist while condemning the artist's shitty behavior? Now, he would disagree, but Malcolm is no artist. Nevertheless, the point remains. I often struggle with this. Most recently, two events put me at odds with the cult of celebrity. First, I watched the, quote, Quiet on the Set, end quote, series. My response to that has been, quote, the more I learn, the more I think that the hashtag save all children people might be onto something, end quote. Like, the public narrative eventually became that Hollywood producers are sleazy dudes who exploit the vulnerable and naive. As they say, seeing is believing. To have such overwhelming and damning evidence and realize that it most likely changed nothing shook me. Not a surprise, as they say, but still shocking. In the other incident, I discovered a song that I liked by Falling in Reverse. I did some digging to find that the lead singer is abusive and violent. This one is less complicated because it A, only implicates the single individual, and B, it's only one song and it's really not that great, honestly. So a clean break is possible. What's all this have to do with Malcolm? Well, he's going in the quote-unquote like least category this time, and I don't want that to look like I'm endorsing his early behavior. He's a creep, plain and simple. Chauvinistic at the least, and as I said, borderline misogynistic. I make no claims otherwise or excuses for the comments or behavior. But I agree with the points he made earlier, and I don't this time. And therein lies the dilemma. How do I, other than my outright verbal condemnation, reconcile these thoughts? I'm not popular enough to quote-unquote be canceled, but I want to remain true to my values. Hopefully I made my intentions clear. If not, I apologize and promise to try to do better. Real men of science. None of my heroes shine in this chapter. Malcolm, as you'll see, betrays us all. Arnold tries to step up when he realizes his monumental screw-up, but he dies. Only Wu gets consideration, and merely by default. He does nothing heroic. Simply mans the control room while Arnold goes to turn the power back on. I suppose he steps up when needed, but it's literally the bare minimum. So like I'll say in a few minutes, this chapter is just kind of a bummer. I came up with a late thought about Grant. After all, he's been out there in the shit. And he does help the kids initially escape, but he doesn't use science to do so. He just sneaks them past and then back again. And locks his stupid self in the maintenance area and spends the real attack stuck there. So yeah, none of these guys deserve a celebration this time. And now for what I liked least. With all of that being said, my least favorite part of this chapter has to be Malcolm's attitudes about science. I thought he was a comrade in the war on unregulated capitalism. He may yet turn out to be, but this chapter, he took a very different turn. Fueled perhaps by a morphine-induced psychosis, Malcolm absolutely went off on science in this chapter. Okay, here's an excerpt from the book. "You know what's wrong with scientific power?" Malcolm said. "It's a form of inherited wealth. And you know what assholes congenitally rich people are? It never fails." So there you go. There's the stuff about unregulated capitalism. Hammond said, "What is he talking about?" Harding made a sign indicating delirium. Malcolm cocked his eye. "I will tell you what I'm talking about," he said. "Most kinds of power require a substantial sacrifice by whoever wants the power. There's an apprenticeship, a discipline lasting many years. Whatever kind of power you want. President of the company. Black belt in karate. Spiritual guru. Whatever it is you seek, you have to put in the time, the practice, the effort. You must give up a lot to get it. It has to be very important to you. And once you've attained it, it is your power. It can't be given away. It resides in you. It is literally the result of your discipline. Now, what is interesting about this process is that by the time someone has acquired the ability to kill with his bare hands, he has also matured to the point where he won't use it unwisely. So that kind of power has a built-in control. The discipline of getting the power changes you so that you won't abuse it. But scientific power is like inherited wealth, attained without discipline. You read what others have done, and you take the next step. You can do it very young. You can make progress very fast. There's no discipline lasting many decades. There's no mastery. Old scientists are ignored. There's no humility before nature. There's only a get-rich-quick, make-a-name-for-yourself, fast philosophy. Cheat, lie, falsify, it doesn't matter. Not to you or your colleagues. No one will criticize you. No one has any standards. They all try to do the same thing, to do something big and do it fast. And because you can stand on the shoulders of giants, you can accomplish something quickly. You don't even know exactly what you've done, but already you have reported it, patented, and sold it. and the buyer will have even less discipline than you. The buyer simply purchases the power like any commodity. The buyer doesn't even conceive that any discipline might be necessary. See, unregulated capitalism, not science, but we'll get to that. Hammond said, do you know what he's talking about? Ellie nodded. I haven't a clue, Hammond said. I'll make it simple, Malcolm said. A karate master does not kill people with his bare hands. He does not lose his temper and kill his wife. The person who kills is the person who has no discipline, no restraint, and who has purchased his power in the form of a Saturday night special. And that is the kind of power science fosters and permits. And that is why you think that to build a place like this is simple. It was simple, Hammond insisted. Then why did it go wrong? Well, first of all, I'll tell you why it went wrong. Hammond is not a man of science. That's the first part. Now, let me get onto the rest of it. Okay, second of all, I have no idea what he's talking about with inherited wealth. Are you working with previously discovered knowledge? Yes, but isn't that true of every discipline? He uses the example of a karate student who learns proper discipline so that he doesn't kill with his bare hands, even though he can. Like, doesn't every mentor or educator worth their salt teach that discipline? Especially in science and math, we talk about the greats upon whose shoulders we stand. At best, this feels like misplaced aggression due to a very specific scenario. At worst, it verifies the suspicions of those already biased against the practice. I don't think that the backlash to science when Crichton wrote the book reached the heights of today, but there's always an undercurrent of mistrust, as I've discussed previously. Any feeding into that, no matter how well-intentioned, is dangerous in my opinion. That's not to say that we can't challenge science. In fact, the true practice of science welcomes the challenge. Hell, it's part of the process that we learn in high school. You start with a question. Sometimes that question involves already established rules or routines. That's why I consider his comments irresponsible, in spite of the actual danger they may or may not pose. And now for another excerpt from the book. This is Malcolm talking. At the same time, the great intellectual justification of science has vanished. Ever since Newton and Descartes, science has explicitly offered us the vision of total control. Science has claimed the power to eventually control everything through its understanding of natural laws. But in the 20th century, that claim has been shattered beyond repair. First, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle set limits on what we could know about the subatomic world. Oh well, we say, none of us live in a subatomic world. It doesn't make any practical difference as we go through our lives. Then Gödel's theorem set similar limits to mathematics, the formal language of science. Mathematicians used to think that their language had some special inherent trueness that derived from the laws of logic. Now we know that what we call quote-unquote reason is just an arbitrary game. It's not special in the way we thought it was. And now chaos theory proves that unpredictably is built into our daily lives. It is as mundane as the rainstorm we cannot predict. And so the grand vision of science, hundreds of years old, the dream of total control, has died in our century. And with it, much of the justification, the rationale for science to do what it does, and for us to listen to it. Science has always said that it may not know everything now, but it will know eventually. But now we see that isn't true. It is an idle boast, as foolish and as misguided as a child who jumps off a building that believes he can fly. This is very extreme, Hammond said, shaking his head. We are witnessing the end of the scientific era. Science, like any other outmoded system, is destroying itself. As it gains in power, it proves itself incapable of handling that power. Because things are going very fast now. 50 years ago, everyone was gaga over the atomic bomb. That was power. No one could imagine anything more. Yet, a bare decade after the bomb, we begin to have genetic power. And genetic power is far more potent than atomic power. And it will be in everyone's hands. It will be in kits for backyard gardeners, experiments for school children, sheep labs for terrorists and dictators. And that will force everyone to ask the same question. What should I do with my power? Which is the very question science says it cannot answer. If I didn't make myself clear, I agree with Hammond. Yikes! It's opposite day today, agreeing with Hammond over Malcolm. But seriously, I understand wanting to brag about a shiny new toy. But he falls into the exact same trap that he warns others of avoiding. Even today, how much do we understand of chaos theory? So, to pin the end of scientific inquiry on the development of chaos theory so early feels, well, reckless and irresponsible. That, my friends, is not how science works. You don't get to invalidate hundreds of years of progress simply because of a counterfactual finding. We don't fully understand the subatomic world because we don't live in a subatomic world. It sounds like an explanation, not an excuse. And don't get me started on Gödel. That just sounds like an intentionally lazy and misleading interpretation to prove a point. And who will bother to go through the trouble to debunk the claim? Barely even worth a Brandolini mention, in my opinion. I went off on Hammond. It's only fair to do the same for Malcolm. Screw Malcolm. Now for what I liked best. Well, I finally came around to liking Malcolm least. In fact, I found him downright obnoxious. So, what do I like best? Perhaps you can guess from that intro that I struggled to come up with something. Honestly, not trying to be dramatic, but this might be my least favorite chapter. Okay, buddy, not trying to be dramatic. Chapter named Control with multiple dino attacks. You said yourself what a pleasant surprise that was. Then the prophecy of Malcolm came true in a big way. But now you have to admit that your douchebag hero is the asshole we thought he was. All of a sudden, it's your least favorite chapter. Okay, yes, I admit that it looks bad, but let me try to explain. I'm well past the heartbreak of hero worship. Yes, I enjoyed all of the dinosaur attacks in this chapter. What an unexpected surprise. But I already covered them in the appropriate section. Have I repeated content between sections before? Maybe. Okay, you win. If I can't convince you, I will go with that for this section. Also, yes, I admit to wanting it all to go wrong. Well, maybe not all wrong, but I wanted things to fail because they refused to implement safety measures and redundancy protocols. Not because science is dead or extinct or whatever dumb shit Malcolm said in this chapter. So I can't even revel in that victory. Honestly, man, this chapter is just a bummer. So yeah, dinosaur attacks. And now for my final thoughts. What more can I say? This chapter put me through the ringer a bit. Up, then down, then way down. I understand there needs to be a lull after the climax of the plot. Two things. Is this actually the climax? Because I feel like we have a bit more that needs to happen before that. And two, what the hell am I even talking about? There's plenty of action in this chapter. I have no idea what is happening to me. Maybe I am shook because of Malcolm's betrayal. But why? Sorry, guys. No time to unpack that now. Maybe in the finale. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us if you haven't already at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I wrote an article about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 150. I'm going to put up one about Fallout episode 4 probably tomorrow. I also am going to continue the comic reviews into next week because, as I've said a couple of times, those got interrupted this week. I also put up an article about the new Mario movie and what we know about that, so be sure to check that out to get the latest information on that. There's also a link to our YouTube, where I'm currently only doing the calendar, but I did put together the Mario honorable mention video. I just have to narrate it and put it together and put it up on the YouTube, so that one should go up hopefully tomorrow as well. A lot of things are happening tomorrow, and we'll see if they actually happen, because I also have to mow and help Aiden set up a garden, but yeah, we'll see how things go. Our Instagram is all miss right now, so I'll probably try to reboot that again next month when I'm out of school and can figure out a way to keep it going in the fall when I start school up again. I will be back with this series at some point, hopefully in a couple of days. We'll see. Like I say, I'm pretty much shooting for the end of May as the wrap up for this one, and then I'll figure out what to do about the Poppy War and the Dragon Republic. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.